hundreds of thousands, challenging the Muslims, led by the Qazi, who had stopped the sankirtan, broken the drum, and Lord Chaitanya broke out the sankirtan from Shiva's Thakur's Angan, and the first huge Nagar Sankirtan. And they're having this discussion now at his house. And last time we discussed how Lord Chaitanya berated the scriptures of the Yavanas. He says that they're written recently, and there's condone meat eating and so forth. So we're now reading text number 171. Sahaje Yavana Shastri Ardhra Vichar Hasitahi Mahaprabhu Puchen Arvar. The reasoning and arguments, Lord Chaitanya is speaking, the Qazi is continuing, he's responding. The reasoning and arguments in the scriptures of the meat eaters are not very sound. So he's already surrendered. Upon hearing this statement from the Qazi, Lord Chaitanya smiled and inquired from him as follows. My dear maternal uncle, I wish to ask you another question. Please tell me the truth. Do not try to cheat me with tricks. In your city, there is always congregational chanting of the holy name. A tumultuous uproar of music, singing, and dancing is always going on. As a Muslim magistrate, you have the right to oppose the performance of Hindu ceremonies. But now you do not forbid them. I cannot understand the reason why. The Qazi said, everyone calls you Gaur Hari. Please let me address you by that name. Kindly listen, O Gaur Hari. If you come to a private place, I shall then explain the reason. But Chaitanya refused. All these men are my confidential associates. There's like thousands of men around him. They're all my confidential associates. You may speak frankly. There is no reason to be afraid of them. The Qazi said, so this is his famous dream where Lord Chaitanya comes on his chest. Qazi said, when I went to the Hindu's house, broke the drum, and forbade the performance of congregational chanting, in my dreams that very night, I saw a greatly fearful lion roaring very loudly, his body like a human being's and his face like a lion's. I guess we can guess who that is, right? While I was asleep, the lion jumped on my chest, laughing fiercely and gnashing his teeth. Placing his nails on my chest, the lion said in a grave voice, I shall at once bifurcate your chest as you broke the Madanga drum. You have forbidden the performance of my congregational chanting. Therefore, I must destroy you. Being very much afraid of him, I closed my eyes. He's already asleep. In the dream, he closed his eyes. Closed his eyes and trembled. Seeing me so afraid, the lion said, I have defeated you just to teach you a lesson, but I must be merciful to you. On that day, you did not create a very great disturbance. Therefore, I have excused you and not taken your life. But if you perform such activities again, I shall not be tolerant. At that time, I shall kill you and your entire family and all the meat eaters. After saying this, the lion left, but I was very much afraid of him. Just see the marks of the nails on my heart. You can see, over here. It's more than just a dream. After this description, the Qazi showed his chest. Having heard him and seen the marks, all the people there accepted the wonderful incident. The Qazi continued, I did not speak to anyone about this incident, but on that very day, one of my orderlies came to see me. After coming to me, the orderly said, when I went to stop the congregational chanting, suddenly flame struck my face. My beard was burned. Careful, you shouldn't get beards. My beard was burned, and there were blisters on my cheeks. Every orderly who went gave the same description. After seeing this, I was very much afraid. I asked them not to stop the congregational chanting, but to go sit down at home. Just tell the orderly, this henchman. They called them all the orderly, you know. Then all the meat eaters, hearing that there would be unrestricted congregational chanting in the city, came to submit a petition. The religion of the Hindus has increased unlimitedly. There are always vibrations of Hari, Hari. We do not hear anything else but this. One meat eater said, the Hindus say Krishna, Krishna. And they laugh, cry, dance, chant, and fall on the ground, smearing their bodies with dirt. Vibrating Hari Hari, the Hindus make a tumultuous sound. If the king hears it, certainly he will punish you. So they're talking to the Qazi. Qazi's like a sheriff, and the king is the Nawab, Nawab Hussein Shah. Purport, the word Patasha, or Patasaha, refers to the king, Nawab Hussein Shah, whose full name was Alauddin Sayyad Hussein Shah. It was at that time, this is AD 1498, 1521, he lived at that time, or this is when it happened. He was at that time the independent king of Bengal. Formerly he was the servant of the cruel Nawab of the Habsi dynasty named Mujaffar Khan. But somehow or other, he assassinated his master and became the king. So these are not very nice people. After gaining the throne of Bengal, he declared himself Sayyid Hussein Alauddin Serif Mukha. There is a book called the Vijaya-us-Salatam, whose author, Gholam Hussein, says that Nawab Hussein Shah belonged to the family of Mukha Serif. To keep his family's glory, he took the name Serif Mukha. Generally, however, he is known as Nawab Hussein Shah. After his death, his eldest son, Nasarat Shah, became king of Bengal. This king also was very cruel. He committed many atrocities against the Vaishnavs. As a result of his sinful activities, one of his servants from the Kojak group killed him while he was praying in the mosque.
Whoa.
So, it's interesting to contemplate what the environment was in which Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement actually was born and manifested. It was the rule was completely inimical, and yet Lord Chaitanya he opened the Sankirtan movement, and the devotees started chanting and dancing. You can imagine today if you went to Saudi Arabia and started the Sankirtan movement. You know, it was that kind of cruel and determined opposition, and yet we see how the devotees were victorious. And you know, with this Qazi story is amazing. Srinivasadev himself intervened and convinced him not to oppose the Sankirtan. Continuing with the Qazi's account, I then inquired from these Yavanas, I know that these Hindus by nature chant Hari Hari. The Hindus chant the name Hari because that is the name of their god. But you are Muslim mediators. Why do you chant the name of the Hindus' god? The mediator replied, sometimes I joke with the Hindus. Some of them are called Krishna Das, and some of them are called Ram Das. Some of them are called Hari Das. They always chant Hari Hari, and thus I thought they would steal the riches from someone's house. Prabhupada explains the meaning of Hari Hari is I am stealing, I am stealing. This is the way they hear it, the Muslim. Hari means to take away. You know, he takes away your attachments, takes away your wealth, takes away your heart. Okay, I think I'm coming to the end of my allotted reading. What was the last number? 195? Oh, I already went over. Sorry. All right, we'll leave it at that. That's text 199. So we'll read how the Muslims are involuntarily chanting now. They have to chant because they picked up the sound. So 195. Okay, that was all about the background of Nawab Hussein Shah. Just a few notes on that, because I do want to read about Sita Devi, Madhu Pandit Prabhu, Madhu Pandit Goswami actually, and Janava Mata. But we see that, you know, the lesson to take from this, of course, aside from just relishing the way in which Krishna is arranging for the... this Qazi actually became a great devotee. When you go on Parakram, that's one of the first places you go, and there's a memorial there and offer basins. But we can see in general how Krishna is he shows his power and helps the spread of the Sankirtan movement. And oftentimes the least likely person you can imagine, you know, we've all had experience, becomes a devotee because they have some life-changing experience. For the Qazi, he was very fortunate to have a life-changing experience, a direct darshan of Lord Nrisimhadev. But for others, the meeting a devotee, many people who were present during Prabhupada's time recount in the histories, the many memoirs and biographies of Prabhupada, how they underwent such a sea change, such a profound change in their heart, just from meeting Srila Prabhupada, talking to him, reading his books. I was just, I work on the Vyasa Puja offerings at this time. And I never heard this before, only the account of how Keshava Bharati Maharaj became a devotee. He was living in the high desert near Los Angeles with his wife, and he was searching, he was doing some Buddhist meditation. He was totally confused, like all of us, you know, we're reading everything here and there. He had a whole study program, he had a full shelf full of books, you know, Buddhism and this and Shankaracharya and so many things, yoga. So one day, he was living in this little community, and there was like 100 people. And there was one lady who was known to be like a psychic, spiritualist, like that, you know. And one day she went shopping down in the village, and there was some kind of a supermarket, you know, and there was a devotee who was distributing books there. He'd come, you know, out of Los Angeles. And so this spiritualist picked it up. She said, well, this will be good for Ken, or whatever his name was. You know, she wasn't interested. What would she pick up? An Isha Upanishad and a BTG. So she comes back and she gives it to then, you know, he who became Keshava Bharati. So this is for you, you know, I thought you might be interested. So he looks at it, doesn't read it, you know, he just puts it on the shelf at the end of all the other books because he has to read them in order. He has this very systematic thing. All right, so there it is. You know, the Prabhupada's books are waiting there like a time bomb. You know. So then his wife goes on some kind of safari or something, or some, you know, spiritual quest in the middle of Mexico. Not at the border, not on the coast, internal, you know, everyone was like, you know, anyway, there's mezcal and everything, whatever. So she comes back from that, you know, and she found one little bookstore in the little village, and there was one English book in it, which she picked out for her husband, not for her. What was the book? Bhagavad Gita as it is. So she comes back, and she gives him this, and then, you know, he says, this is for you, you know. All right, puts it on the end of the shelf, you know, and he starts reading his stuff. So I forget all the details, but it came a point where they actually met a devotee and he saw Prabhupada's name in his picture. And it suddenly dawned on him, oh, these two books, the Isha Upanishad and the Bhagavad Gita, are by the same author. So, I mean, I was like that too. You know, I would start to see signs, and, oh, this is very significant, you know. I once attended a Scientology meeting. I was recounting to Indra Pramod how I had all these chances not to be a devotee, you know, when I was searching, you know. So this is Scientology on the Lower East Side. They were just getting started in 1968. And they took me in, and, you know, they had all this stuff going on. I was, you know, okay, interesting, you know. And as I was leaving the apartment, there was a huge crash. And somehow or other, we were passing through the kitchen, going to the door, and one of the shelves came down, and all the canned goods and everything made a great crash. And it was very significant. I shouldn't become a Scientologist. Anyway, so Keshava Bharati, he said, this is very significant. These are by the same author, you know. So he began to read the Isha and the Bhagavad Gita and the BTG. And he was fascinated. You know, all the questions that were coming up that nobody could answer in all the other books, and he was trying this meditation, you know, and trying to hear the sound from the seventh astral plane, and he described this all. And finally, it just made so much sense, you know. And so he went not to L.A., which is very close, but back to San Francisco, because they had, you know, he wanted to go to the Frederick Treeks Temple. The temple, he went to the address, it was closed up, it was boarded up, what to do now, but there was a devotee on the street distributing, and he said, oh, the temple's moved a few blocks away, so they went there, and, you know, they were interested in going in, but, oh, you must have come to see Srila Prabhupada, who'll be here tonight. You know, it was just, it's like one day over before he went to India, and he got to see Prabhupada, that was it, you know, he got to hear him, it was just, tears were coming. He was just like, so this is, you know, that's a very positive, this is also positive because he was coming all the way from the Mlecha, you know, side, from the opposition, breaking the drum, being loyal to the Muslim Dharma. And, you know, he got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He had that revelation in his heart, Lord Nrisingadev, and he became converted. And he was, became a great devotee. So this is how the Sankirtan movement works. We should always remember that anyone can become a devotee. Everyone is a devotee at heart. And we are the agents of Lord Chaitanya to try to bring others into the family, to give them that experience, whatever it is, through a book, through our own company, through chanting prasadam, somehow or other catch him in that loving network of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that they can be transformed. And that's what's going on here. And throughout the CC, you'll see that goes on. Jagai and Madai, this is a story from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And Lord Chaitanya, he also eventually initiates the Patan Vaishnavas, right, in his sannyas days. A whole bunch of Muslims became, there was a peer. Peer is a word for guru, in, right, that there's a peer. And, you know, they had a debate and defeated again, and, you know, his whole, all of his followers became great devotees. So it's possible, even in this age, that the Sankirtan can spread like wildfire. Okay, I want to read a little bit. There's quite a bit here that I've done a little research on. Now, there's so much about Mother Sita and Sita Devi, the consort of Lord Ram. It really is such a tragic story, you know. There's a lot of, like, heart-rending stuff in the Ramayana, you know, the exile of Ram, the kidnapping of Sita, the search for Sita, the battle, her final, you know, what she's undergoing in the palace. It's all very, very heartrending in the mood of separation and like that. So I wanted to kind of, in contrast, you know, give like the most positive thing that happens that's so upbeat and very enlivening with Sita, and that is her marriage to Ram. So I pulled that out of this condensed Ramayana by, is it Krishna Dharma, I think his name is? And I'm just going to read that, and it's very well done, and we'll relish this. So the context is that Ram and Lakshman have gone to be trained by Vishwamitra. And they've, you know, killed a bunch of Rakshasas already, and now they're going to Mithila. You know, Vishwamitra is taking them to Mithila to undergo, to challenge, you know, to meet this bow challenge. This bow is very significant. This bow, which is from Shiva, be told of here. So Janaka is telling the story of the bow and also the appearance of Sita at this point, and then the boys will come in. Janaka continued speaking to the sage and the princes, who listened with great curiosity. Actually, he's speaking now to Vishwamitra and to Ram and Lakshman, who have come there, been greeted wonderfully, and he's describing this bow, I believe. Once I was performing a sacrifice. No, this is how Sita appeared. This is a little bit, this is an appearance thing. Once I was pouring a sacrifice to please the gods in order to get a worthy successor in my line. As the sacrificial ground was being prepared with a golden plowshare, a wonderful child appeared from out of the earth itself. This female child, who became known by the name of Sita, grew up in my palace as my daughter. Her beauty is matchless. I have raised you with love and will give her in marriage to whoever can show exceptional prowess. Various rulers and princes have approached me and sued me for her hand, appealed to me for a hand. Seeing these kings, I set a standard for winning Sita, saying, whosoever can hold and string the mighty bow of Shiva will win this princess. This was a gift that had been given to Janaka, this bow from Shiva. Actually, to his forebears, it had come down to him. Many proud kings thought they would easily bend the bow. However, coming before that bow, they were soon shorn of their valor and pride. They were hardly able to move the bow, even slightly, far less lift it and string it. Angry at their failure, numerous kings together besieged Mithila for one full year. When my resources were exhausted, I prayed to the gods for support. I then received from them a vast army equipped with every kind of weapon. That celestial army quickly dispersed those bellicose kings in all directions. Thus, this bow remains here, unconquered and awaiting some truly powerful king. Janaka looked at the two royal princes, Ram and Lakshman. Ram's fame had reached him, and he felt sure that the prince would win his daughter's hand. As the king beheld Ram's beautiful features, his powerful physique and noble bearing, he longed for the prince to pass the test and become his son-in-law. Ram stood before Vishwamitra with folded palms. Janaka stood before Vishwamitra with folded palms. Come now, O sage, and bring these boys with you. If any can string the bow, then the hand of the divinely born Sita will be won. Janaka led them to the part of the great palace where the bow was kept. It was stored in an iron chest, which was adorned with gold engravings and covered with numerous flower garlands, this big, huge chest. These 300 powerfully built men somehow managed to move the chest to the center of the hall where it lay. Janaka turned toward Ram. "Here is the wonderful celestial bow. It has been kept and worshipped by the Janakas for many generations, but his forebears. Not even the gods, demons, yakshas, gandharvas, or kinnaras can string it. How then could any ordinary man gaze now upon this bow, O Ram?" Janaka ordered that the chest be opened. As the lid was lifted, the brilliant bow was revealed. It spread a golden glow all around. Constructed of pure horn, it was skillfully worked with gold and silver images of the pastimes of the gods. Hundreds of golden bells and ornaments hung from the bow, which was studded with diamonds and other gems. Seeing the bow, the two princes gasped in appreciation. Ram bowed down in respect and then walked slowly around, circumambling his bow. He looked toward Vishwamitra, who nodded slightly. Understanding Vishwamitra's indication, Ram stood with joined palms at the bow's center. He turned to Janaka. "I wish to attempt your test. I shall now try to lift this heavenly bow to gauge its weight and strength." While being extolled by Vishwamitra and the other sages, who uttered, "Victory, victory, jai, jai," Ram placed his hand upon the bow. There was complete silence in the hall. Janaka held his breath as Ram stood motionless. Vishwamitra, knowing the extent of Ram's power, smiled slightly. In the balcony of the hall stood Sita. She looked at Ram, feeling a natural attraction for the prince. Until then, she had never been interested in any of her suitors, although the most powerful kings from all around the world had come there. To the gentle Sita, they were all arrogant and overly proud of themselves. Sita was deeply religious. All her life, she had prayed that Vishnu might become her husband. As she watched Ram approach the bow, she felt her love for the Lord being awakened. Was this Vishnu himself? After all, she's an expansion of Lakshmi. Becoming absorbed in her loving sentiment, Sita felt anxiety. Would Ram string the bow and become her husband? She held the matrimonial garland with trembling hands. Suddenly, Ram seized the bow by its middle part and raised it high above his head. A gasp of astonishment filled the hall. It was inconceivable. Ram tossed the bow slightly to gauge its weight. Placing one end of the colossal bow on the ground, Ram then moved to the other end and strung it. He pulled the string and bent the bow around into a semicircle. It broke suddenly, and a sound like the crash of thunder reverberated around the hall. The earth shook as if there were an earthquake. Everyone was stunned and rendered senseless for some moments. Janaka was amazed. He turned to Vishwamitra. "I have now witnessed Ram's strength. His achievement is incredible. I have secured Ram as her husband. Sita will bring undying fame to my family." Janaka's eyes were filled with tears. Surely Ram was a divine personality. There could be no doubt. Till then, no king had been able to move the bow even slightly. Some could hardly even look upon it. But Ram had handled it as if it were a piece of bamboo. The king looked up to Sita and the balcony. She was filled with delight upon seeing Ram's feet, and her breast heaved with excitement. Awaiting his father's indication to come down, she stood surrounded by her many female attendants. Janaka turned to speak to Ram, who stood peacefully, having replaced the broken bow in its chest. "I shall now fulfill my pledge to give Sita's hand to whoever could string this bow. Sita is dearer to me than my own life, but I gladly offer her to you." Sita came down from the balcony with a garland of golden flowers in her hands and stood by her father. She was resplendent in a silk sari of deep maroon, a necklace of pearls shining on her breast. As she walked, her golden anklets tinkled and her diamond earrings swung to and fro. Smiling gently, she shyly lifted her eyes a little and looked at Ram, who caught her glance. Both felt their hearts moved by love. In that moment, their union was forged. Sita's father signaled, and she went before Ram. She placed the garland around his neck, indicating her acceptance of him as her husband. She blushed slightly and kept her eyes down. Walking slowly, she went back to her father, who felt as if his heart might burst with happiness. The king wanted to perform the marriage ceremony as soon as possible. He asked for Vishvamitra's permission, and then the sage agreed. And when the sage agreed, the king arranged for swift messengers to go to Ayodhya to inform Dasharatha. The ministers of Janaka left immediately and arrived at Ayodhya after 3 days. They quickly went to the palace and were ushered into the presence of Dasharatha, who appeared to them like a powerful god. Put at ease by the emperor's benign expression and gentle words of welcome, the ministers politely told him of the events in Mithila. The emperor was delighted to hear the submission of Janaka's envoys. Ram and Lakshman were well. They had conquered over the demons, and more than that, Ram had now won the beautiful Sita for his bride. Dasharatha recalled how he had been contemplating the marriage of his son even as Vishvamitra had arrived at his palace. The sage must have been sent by Providence, by whose arrangement this union had surely been made. After consulting with his counselors, Dasharatha made up his mind to leave the next day for Mithila. Taking with him his ministers and preceded by a party of priests, Dasharatha went the next day, morning toward Mithila, with his army marching close behind. They arrived after 5 days. Dasharatha approached Janaka, who graciously received the abundant riches brought as gifts. Janaka embraced the emperor, and the two old friends sat together discussing the wedding. Janaka told Dasharatha how Sita had appeared from the earth. He also told him of a prophecy he had heard. "Once the celestial seer Narada had informed me that Sita is Vishnu's eternal consort, and that he would one day become her husband in this world. I thus devised a test which would only be possible for Vishnu to pass. Your son has now passed that difficult test and must therefore be Sita's eternal husband." Dasharatha was again astonished to hear of Ram's divinity. He still found it hard to believe, having raised Ram as his child. He looked at the son who stood before him modestly with bowed head and folded palms. Dasharatha was overpowered with love. His loving sentiments overcame any thoughts of Ram's divinity. The emperor looked again at Janaka and said, "I approve this marriage in every way. Perform the ceremony under the guidance of learned Brahmins. O king, the success of a gift depends upon the way it is given. Therefore, be sure that all the necessary rites are properly observed without loss of time." Dasharatha wanted to ensure that the marriage ceremony was performed carefully according to scriptural codes. He did not want any ill fortune created by neglect of sacred rituals. Such errors would blight the marriage and create future difficulties for the couple. Janaka issued instructions to his ministers and then sat with Dasharatha in his great palace hall. Both of them listened as Vashishtha recited Ram's family lineage. After hearing of Ram's ancestry, beginning with the sun god, Janaka recited Sita's genealogy, describing his own ancestry, which began with Brahma. When Janaka finished, Vishvamitra spoke. He suggested that Sita's sister, Urmila, wed Ram's brother Lakshman. The sage would also advise that Janaka's brother Kushadvaja allow his two daughters to marry Bharata and Shatrughna. Then there would be one ceremony for all four marriages. So in this way there was this major uniting of these two families, you can see. Rising from his seat with joy, Janaka said, "Let it be so," again and again. He fell prostrate before Vishvamitra and said, "I am ever your servant. Your words are worthy of my worship, and I stand commanded by you. Let the wedding take place tomorrow, a day marked by favorable stars." As the two kings sat talking together, the sun gradually set. Janaka took his leave from Dasharatha and departed for his personal quarters, flanked by his ministers and 100 warriors. Thousands of golden oil lamps lit up the hall as the crowds of Brahmins made their way out, all of them constantly uttering auspicious Vedic hymns. So this is very wonderful description of the marriage, of the imminent marriage of Sita and Ram, and how he broke the bow. And you can see by how this is such a wonderful, if you read the Ramayana, it's so uplifting. It's filled with all of these wonderful stories, the heroes, perfect examples of behavior. This is truly a, you know, what the Vedic culture is all about. Whereas you see the contrast today, who are the heroes today who people worship? The political heroes, with clay feet, if I may say, you know, this is a compliment. You know, the sports heroes, the celebrities of the movies, there's no heroes. There's no really ideal people that people that young people, what to speak of people in general, can emulate. And so you have a culture that's on its way to a very dark situation, which only Lord Chaitanya's movement can mitigate. So I'd like to read a little bit also about Madhu Pandit and his mother Janava. See, what did I do with the Janava part? Oh yes, here. So first we'll read about, let's see, where is this? 3, 2, 5, okay. Yes, Janava Ma. So Janava and Vasudha were sisters, actually. Janava was the younger, and they, the father, I forget what the father's name, do you recall?
Surya Das.
They were, let's see, I'll read here. Sri Nityananda's two wives, Sri Vasudha and Sri Janava, are expansions of Lord Balaram's eternal consorts Varuni and Revati. After the disappearance of the Panchatattva and many of Lord Chaitanya's eternal associates, a huge Sankirtan festival was held in Keturi on Gaurpurnima. This is the first Gaurpurnima festival. Thousands of Lord Gauranga's followers, such as Narottam, Shyamananda, Srinivas, Vrindavandas, Murari Chaitanya, Parameshwar, and Miniketan Ram Das, attended the first Keturi Sankirtan Mahotsava. And if I'm correct, they also invited devotees from Vrindavan. This is from Bengal, and they came also from Vrindavan. They celebrated Gauranga's appearance day with thunderous chanting, exuberant dancing, and tasty prasadam. Now, there's a whole wonderful pastimes around this. There's like, it was a three-day festival. The chanting went on and on, Lord, the Panchatattva appeared there, right? Everyone could see them, which is amazing. They had all disappeared. Now they appeared before the eyes of everyone due to the tremendous emotion and purity of the chanting. So, now Janava Ma, she was in charge of serving out the prasadam, as I understand. And she was that at this time the senior devotee. They all respected her as the senior in the Vaishnava Acharya. So six sets of Gornatai deities were installed. First Gornatai deities. Sri Janava Ma cooked a matchless feast and personally served all the Vaishnavas. During Narottam Das Thakur's Prem Nam Kirtan, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and all their associates suddenly appeared to the delight of all. Ma Janava, an affectionate name given by the devotees, traveled throughout Gaur and Rajamandalas. Wherever she went, the Gaur Bhaktas happily greeted her and served her. Known as Nityananda Swarupini, Janava Devi overflowed with prema bhakti. She delivered many atheists and sinners by her compassionate preaching. Now, I also understand that, it's mentioned here, that she went to Vrindavan and encouraged, you know, kind of got in her case a little bit, okay, look, we have to get the books out, right? Because everyone was in shock after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance, and everyone was just doing bhajan and kind of, you know, closed off. So look, we have to keep the nectar flowing and preaching. And so she insisted that, you know, these books then be sent to Bengal and copied. And was it before or after she went there that Narottam and Srinivas and Shyamananda went there and get trained up as the next generation of preachers? Without that effort, the whole thing would have kind of just, you know, sunk down into very internal, you know. So she was essential, you know, for the preaching. And of course, Nityananda was the prime preacher of Lord Chaitanya. He had signed it to preach in Bengal, and now it's all over the world. So there's, let's see. There's this part here that I gleaned from somewhere else. This is from the Bhatnaratnakra. After presiding over the festival of Keturi, Ma Janava decided to go to Vrindavan. One day when she was bathing in the Yamuna, a small black hand grabbed the end of her cloth as she was getting out of the water. When she looked, however, there was no one there. Then Gopinath spoke to her. I want to come and stay with you. When you're taking bath in the Ganges one day, I'll come and join you. After passing some days in great happiness in Sri Vrindavan Dham, Sri Janava Ma set out on the path back to Gaudadesh. First she came to Keturi and then to Buduri Gram, where she arranged the marriage of Bor Ganga Das and so forth. After the marriage, Sri Ishwar entrusted the worship of Shama Sundarji to Baranga. Then she went to Ekachakra, that was where you know, she lived with Nityananda. Oh, that's where Nityananda appeared, the birthplace of her worshipful Lord. Then she went to different places. As she was bathing in the Ganges one day, something touched her body in the water. Then she lifted that object out of the water and she beheld the enchanting form of Sri Gopinachi while tears of love streamed from her eyes. This deity is at present being worshipped by the descendant of Ganga Devi, the daughter of Nityananda Prabhu at Jerat Hugli. And this is at present was when they wrote the Bhaktivedanta, so whether it's still happening, I don't know. So back to the other account. So, let's see. Sri Thakur Bhaktivinoda offers this prayer to Janava Mata in his Kalyana Kalpataru. O Janavi Devi, by the power of your divine qualities, be merciful to this servant of yours. Dispel this illusion which torments me, and relieve me of material existence. Let me take shelter at your lotus feet. You are Nityananda Shakti, the divine energy of Lord Nityananda himself. You are the guru of Krishna Bhakti. Be merciful to me and grant me the shade of your lotus feet, which are like a desire tree. You have delivered countless abominable sinners. Please deliver me in the same way. Today, praying for your mercy, this lowly sinner falls at your holy feet. It is said that Sri Janava Devi left this world by entering the deity of Gopinath in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, she serves Krishna as Ananga Manjari, or as you say, Ananga Manjari. Hare Krishna. Now, is this the same Gopinath deity that was then installed by Maru Pandit and became in the big temple? Different. Okay. So now, just a few words about Maru Pandit. There isn't much about him. He was a disciple of Gadadhara Pandit. Let's see. Vrajanabha, Lord Krishna's great-grandson, installed the original Gopinath deity in Vrindavan over 5,000 years ago. About 500 years ago, Paramananda Bhattacharya discovered the deity in the earth at Vanshivat on the banks of the Yamuna. Madhu Pandit Goswami, a disciple of Gadadhara Pandit, worshipped the Gopinath deity. The Bhaktivedanta says that Sri Gopinachi, who is an ocean of mercy, forever sports along the enchanting banks of the Yamuna at Vanshivat. His bodily luster steals the mind of whoever sees him. When the soothing sweetness of Gopinath's charming form enters the heart, it immediately extinguishes the burning fire of material existence. Now the original Gopinath deity stays in Jaipur, Rajasthan. Madhu Pandit Goswami blessed Srinivasacharya with Gopinath's garland before Srinivas, Narottam, and Shamananda took the bullock cart of Goswami Granthas from Vrindavan. So this is like one of the most famous things he did. And this was, again, there's a connection here between Janava Ma and Madhu Pandit, because this effort to copy the books and have them distributed and have the preaching continue was part of his role. He's giving this Gopinath garland to them as a blessing. Now, you know the story, the famous story, how they go all the way to, what was the name of that Veer's place? What is it? Bankura. So that's near Bengal, or in Bengal? In Bengal. So they were almost home, right? They got old. And they had these books. Now, it wasn't like there were many copies of these books. These are like the originals, you know, because Vrindavan was still not that populated. The ghost monies were there, but things were just starting. So it wasn't like you give it to your band of, you know, scholars to make copies. The copies were all in Bengal. So that was the idea. Here you had the original Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, the original Chaitanya Charitamrita, the original Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all these other literatures, Padyavali, you know. And, you know, this is it. Without those, there's no movement. There's no... So anyway, they had to, bring them down. They had been trained by Jiva Goswami, right, very carefully in the philosophy. The Sridhi Vasacharya, Narottam, and Shamananda Prabhu, who had been known as Duki Krishna Das before. So they were the next generation. They were carrying the entire hopes of the Sampradaya for the widespread preaching of Sankirtan. So they get all the way down to Bankura, and he was this petty king, you know. He was proud. Virhamvir means I'm so powerful, right? And he had an astrologer. He would have the astrologer, you know, look at what's happening, and he would say, his henchmen should go here. They do a little, you know, burglary, rob people on the road. They said, oh, there's a party of three men. They have a great treasure with them. You know, you should send your men out. So he sent his men out in the middle of the night. You know, they find this chest with all of the books in it, and they take the chest and go off. And when our three heroes woke up, you know, the books were gone. They were just totally crestfallen, practically. The life just left their body. You know, they'd been entrusted with these books. So Narottam and Shyamananda were rather hopeless. They continued on. But Srinivas Acharya, he had thought, well, maybe I can recover them. So he went going, he came to the city. And this Virahambir, he was somewhat pious, and he was studying Bhagavatam. He had a pundit who was explaining Bhagavatam in one day a week, or maybe every day, I forget. But the explanations were all impersonal. He didn't really know. He wasn't a bhakta. He wasn't a devotee. But he knew that this Bhagavatam was full of learning and it was very important. He wanted to accrue some piety. So Srinivas went and he sat in the back, and he started listening to these explanations. And, of course, they were all bogus, So afterward, I guess he had, are there any questions or comments, like we asked? So Srinivas got up and he started giving another explanation of the passage of the Bhagavatam, which was completely different than the pundit. The pundit was a little bit disturbed. Some people may get disturbed with, our friend Prang, may give a description, but it wasn't exactly like that. But the he said, "What is this?" But it was so sweet that the king was charmed by it, right? So next day he asked Srinivas to give the discourse, and his explanation was so wonderful and so heartwarming that the king was affected, and he became then the commentator on this for the Bhagavatam. So by this influence, his devotional sentiments began to awaken, and he approached Srinivas. "So who are you? Where did you come from? What is your mission?" And he explained, yes, "I'm trying to recover these books. I lost them in the forest," because he knew by then that Virahambir had taken them. So Virahambir, he was very sorry. He bowed down. He brought out the books, and they opened the chest, and there they were. And there's this story about the CC had been put on the bottom, but now it was on the top, right? There's this whole mystical thing that happened. So Srinivas stayed there for some time. He made all the residents into devotees. This was his preaching power was very great. And then he went on to Bengal, delivered the books for copying, and I think he went on to Orissa, and he did all his preaching in Orissa. But, so the books were recovered, and therefore there's a Hare Krishna movement. This is like an essential pastime. Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, all these books really are the foundation. The commentations of all the devotees, on Bhagavatam were there. So that brings us to 8:44. Are there any other stories, comments, things that you would like to add about any of these pastimes? Just to review, we heard how the Sankirtan movement is starting in Bengal. That's with the debate with the Qazi. And we also heard a wonderful story of Sita's marriage, how Lord Ram broke the bow. We heard Janava Ma's, a little bit of her pastime, especially Ketui, she's famous for that, and being the senior Vaishnavi, and encouraging the Goswamis to get the books copied, going to Vrindavan, and finally Madhu Pandit with his blessing, with that Gopinath garland, which protected the books, protected them. And because, they were through all these Muslim areas, somehow they got the books down there. They could have easily been put upon, and anything could have happened, but they were protected. And this is, part of our history. Wonderful reminder. Hare Krishna. Okay, Madan Mohan?
Just a thought. there's a book called The Love Locket. You familiar with a little...
is that by Vishwanath Chakrabarty?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in there...
Samputa. Prema Samputa.
Yeah. Okay. Prema Samputa. That the reason why Krishna disappeared from the Rasa dance, and then it was all explained that this was to increase understanding of Radharani's position so everybody could enter the correct mood. So I'm wondering, is there a similarity with everybody's feeling Sita's separation from Ram, when she went away a couple times, that this isn't something that's generating an immense purification of the heart when one thinks like that, you know, like, oh, Sita should be with Ram, Radha should be with Krishna. Those two are...
Yes, of course, that's part of the lesson. You know, there's this concept that this word, you know, sometimes one word can make that. This word of entrainment, we don't use that word, but think of it, entrainment. Means that, here, you know, here we are, we're spirit souls, conditioned spirit souls, and we're perceiving so many things, and the mind takes on the color of whatever your environment is, your sangha, whatever modes of nature. So, and then you're affected, and you make that yours, and that becomes you, because you identify even more with the mind than with the body. You know, the mind and the body work together. So, the same principle holds for transcendental association. By perceiving and hearing these heart-rending stories of Ram and Sita, or Radha and Krishna, or read Chaitanya Charitamrita, that, you know, we're not completely in that mood, you know, but we're being affected by that. It's purifying us. It's drawing us to it. And this is why hearing these pastimes, hearing the qualities of the Lord, hearing the name, of course, is the process in this age. You know, it does awaken our sympathy, obviously, for Ram and for Sita, and it gives us insight into what real loving emotions are. You know, true love. Just like this one verse that there's so many verses I chant, but this one verse is just contemplating the love between Radha and Krishna when they're together. You know, one thing I thought of, forgive this analogy, but you know, sometimes Prabhupada would say that the purest love we can find in this world is a love for a mother or a child, you know, which is so selfless, so intense, so protective, you know. So this is the standard for, you know, Yashoda and Krishna. This selfless love is really what it's all about. So, but just like love is almost like an entity in and of itself, a feeling, you know. I had the good fortune when I was a child to grow up in a home where there wasn't a breakup, where there was no divorce, you know, and my parents loved each other. Now, it's a material example, but it's similar. And, you know, everyone knows that a child, when he's in a family and he sees the mother and father loving each other and exchanging, you know, that the love is there, that's a very important thing for the child to grow up with, right? And it affects them. So what are they perceiving there, you know? The love is they're seeing something between. But it's the general glow of love, you know. It's just embracing. Whereas if there's anger and there's hatred and there's drunkenness, it's disastrous for the child's psyche, you know. So in a similar way, you know, just contemplating this, the love itself, the feeling of love, selfless love, is a wonderful thing. Like this one verse, Ganapaniya Nirjada. That's half of this verse. So it's describing the love between Radha and Krishna, gana praniya nirjara. It's like an intense waterfall, you know, gana praniya, of intense love, falling into their hearts, each other, overflowing, and then soaking their bodies in tears of love for each other. You know, we don't often think about that. But this is this intense love between each other. Now, we're part of that. You know, probably Radha Krishna Praniya Vikrutiya. Radha Rani is this love personified. That's what that verse means. Radha Krishna Praniya Vikrutiya. She's a transformation of prema. You know, prema personified. Prema Murti Vadakartika Devi. So, we're part and parcel of that. You know, we have that within us. Right? We're part and parcel of Krishna, and that love is meant to attract us, that loving exchange. And the same thing there is Ram and Sita and Vishnu and Lakshmi, you know. And it's meant to show us what real love is, eternal, ever-existing, ever-increasing, with all the varieties. So that we realize that the so-called love in this world is a pale reflection and leads to its opposite. So you're right. That these pastimes where, you know, Krishna takes Radharani from the Rasa dance, all these different things, there's unlimited varieties, you know, of the exchanges. And, you know, that's our subject matter for thinking. It should be. That and all the other pastimes, not that we just focus on that, of course, but that's an important aspect. Because the real attachment here is this comma, which is love, curdled by the modes of nature. It's curdled, you know. It's not the real thing anymore. But we're so enthralled with that, and you know, but it's fake. So just to perceive the real thing by hearing about these wonderful relationships of the devotees with each other, with Krishna, you know, the highest relationship, that softens the heart. It cures the heart of its, you know, hard-heartedness, this steel frame. Yes, Prabhu. From.
What Madan Mohan Prabhu says, there's pastimes, but that's a long pastime.
Yeah, give us a short summary.
Because the Valmiki Ramayana, at the end of the Ramayana, Lord Ram, when he was very angry with the situation took place, because his incarnation purpose was to establish the etiquette of religion, Varnashram Dharma, perfect. So everybody wants Ram Rajya. Even Prabhupada says that Mahatma Gandhi, everybody wanted Ram Rajya, but they don't want Ram. So, but to establish the Ram Rajya, it was proved at the end of his life that there was a lot of people who developed love for Ram but not love for Sita. But the whole idea that the Golok Vrindavan or Ayodhya, the entire service department, devotional service department, is under the Shakti, that Radharani or Mother Janaki. It doesn't exist without her. It is her domain.
Of course.
So they did not have a love, like a laundryman, you know, criticizing, oh, I would not take you, you know, but Ram took it. So this kind of whole pastime took place. I'm not going to give the whole story, but it was required. What he said was required. So that, in that incident, because Ram even asked Valmiki, what should I do? Should I destroy this earth right now? Because I'm in a great separation from Sita. Valmiki said, I don't know, I didn't write anymore. I stopped the writing of Ramayana here. So then where is she? Oh, she is waiting for you in Ayodhya. Then he exhibited his real separation for Sita. He was collecting all those devotees. But that time, the laundryman, all these thousands of Ayodhyavadi who did not have enough love for Sita, only for Ram, changed. That if our object of love is Ram and he has so much love for her, what we are waiting? We really did not know what we are loving. So that then when everything culminated to that point, then Ram took them under the Sayuja river and entered in eternal Ayodhya. So back home, back to Godhead was required.
Jai.
That's the goal of life.
Jai.
I'm just going to say only one Madhu Pandit pastimes. Oh, by the way, that Bir Hambir, that he gave the Guru Dakshina, was those books.
That was the Guru Dakshina.
As a,
the best ever.
Best Guru, yeah, Guru Dakshina. So, Madhu Pandit, one day he was, how important the chanting is, the holy name, Shuddha Naam, when comes, Madhu Pandit, he was disciple of Gadadhar Pandit, he was remembering Ashtakaliya Leela. So he was under this tree, he's meditating and chanting Krishna's Naam. And then as he chanted, the Nama Rupa Guna Leela started manifesting. All these boys are playing with Krishna Balaram, big wrestling match going on and on and on, and he's chanting and seeing this vision, literally, true. And then at one point Krishna says, oh, I'm so tired. So he lie down on the floor. Then there are four types of shakha. Some shakha has a little bit of dust mixed, so they try to serve him and removing the sweats and all this. Other boys are fanning and all this. Then he was like, wow, this is so beautiful. And then he was so much in ecstasy. Then all of a sudden, he come to external point and he remembered that everything disappeared. Mm-hmm. And there was a deity of Gopinath.
Sure.
That's the deity that
makes the deity.
So when we chant, it is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but in Shuddha Satya, it is one.
Right. Thank you for that. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.